The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites. The Six Nations Show on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
It's spinning! It's spinning!
Updates, analysis, and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish.
Gone on it!
I've never seen a team like Ireland before.
This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio. The Six Nations Show.
Now, good morning, and you're very welcome along to episode 2 of the Six Nations Show here on OTB Sports. I'm Neil Tracy, and I'll be coming to you Thursday mornings every game week at 10:30 a.m. during the course of the tournament, looking back and forward to the weekend's games. We'll have analysis, opinion, and hopefully some fun along the way as well. We're streaming live as usual and available to watch or listen on the OTB Sports app. We're on YouTube, Facebook, and across all our social channels as well. And we want you to join the conversation, get your comments into us, and we'll be sure to get them out during the show. What do Ireland have to do to turn this campaign around after 2 defeats from 2 in this Six Nations, the worst start since 1998? What do Ireland have to do to turn this around? Or is it even salvageable? What changes do you make for the Italy game on Saturday week? Do we go with youth or experience or a blend of both? And also as well, obviously we're coming up to the first fallow weekend of this year's championship, but there is Pro 14 and obviously a lot of players that we haven't seen so far in the tournament and hopefully we will get to see a little bit more of over the next few days. Leinster away to the Dragons tomorrow. Team news should be in later on this afternoon. Will be very interesting to see which Byrn more than likely is starting it out half for Leinster. Is it going to be Harry, who we've been speaking about pretty much all week, or Ross Byrn starting it out half? Also tomorrow, Ulster away to Glasgow. They'll have their team announcement coming up later today. And then on Saturday, Munster travel to Edinburgh and Connacht host the Cardiff Blues as well. This week, same as last week, Johnny Murphy and Alison Miller are with me again. Good morning, folks.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. I might just start, actually, a little bit of news this morning. Irish Times reporting, thankfully, a little bit of good news that we haven't had for the last couple of weeks. But they are saying on the contract front, Earls believed to have agreed new one-year deal with Munster. So this is that Keith Earls is pretty much signed on a new one-year deal to keep him at Munster and with the RFU for another season. And also as well, Johnny Sexton expected to have his deal sorted by the time Ireland play Italy next week. Cian Healy's also been offered a one-year deal. Peter O'Mahony, CJ Stander, Ian Henderson and Tadhg Furlong are currently negotiating two-year contracts at the moment. But it is expected all those contract negotiations are actually going well. So it seems that the RFU are keeping hold of their frontliners anyway. Decent bit of news to start the day, guys.
Yeah, I think so. I suppose those players can not have that added stress coming into upcoming games, so they'll be relieved on that front.
And Johnny?
I think there's a lot of uncertainty around all the contract negotiations ahead of everything that's happened over the last 9 months, 12 months, going up to 12 months now. So having contracts sorted, it gives everyone a bit of security and you can just kind of look forward and just concentrating on what you're paid to do, which is play rugby.
Right, so that's the good news out of the way after the first couple of minutes. It's pretty much bad stuff from here on in, is it? Both of you predicted a narrow French win last week. In the end, it was 15-13, but the scoreline probably wasn't reflective of the way the game went. Ireland probably weren't within 2 points of France, realistically. But, Johnny, just to go back on a couple of things you said that Ireland would need to do if they were to win last week when you were looking ahead to it. They need to negate the French line speed. I don't think they did that. And you said they need to pull the trigger at the right time. They probably only tried to pull the trigger once during the 80 minutes. That was when James Lowe almost got that try over in the corner. But aside from that, there really wasn't much to be too enthusiastic about, was there?
No, it's very difficult playing against kind of that level of line speed. And you have to be very comfortable holding the ball for long periods. And it really is tiny margins against that level of line speed. If Keenan passes that ball earlier to Lowe, do you think, it probably gives him a better one-on-one shot in more space? I think for me, probably the disappointment thing is probably their transition play. They obviously had a tactic of going after the air and putting the back three under pressure. Certainly early on in the game, they get a turnover. There's obviously stuff going around on Murray Kinsella had a screenshot of it. They get a turnover. they have a full back line nearly ready to attack, but they stick to kind of their pre-call, and it's that it's being able to you know, to shift out of that, even though that's what you've been practicing all week. It's to trust that when it's on, it's to pull the trigger at the right time. And against teams like that who have that line speed, if you don't pull the trigger at the right time, or you don't take your opportunity, you might only get one or two of those, and that is the difference. So yeah, it was kind of disappointing for me from that perspective that you know, they didn't take those, particularly in their transition play. They didn't take, you know, that one specific opportunity, but there was probably maybe one or two others on turnovers that they got that they just didn't pull the trigger at the right time.
What does that come down to, Alison? Is that a case of a game plan is kind of burned into your head for an entire week? Or, like, are these guys professionals? Do they need to be able to react to the situation in front of them and know that, okay, we are playing a kicking possession, a territory game, but if the opportunity is there, you have to go for it?
To be honest, I'm not sure why, like, they would do that, but I think Johnny makes a really good point. I think it was in the first minute, Ruddock got a turnover. The French midfielder really tight. The left winger is in that horrible exposed position. And I don't know why we don't move the ball there, as Johnny said, and exploit the opportunities when they arise. Like, it's 1 minute into the game. It's a time to threaten France, you know, put some pressure on them and try and exert some influence. But we put up a contestable. Billy Burns puts up a contestable, and that's what we're doing. I don't know if that's down to the fact that we have a tactical focus of, you know, putting up the contestables, or when we're in the, you know, the middle third of the pitch that we're kicking. And I don't know if that's, you know, that you're so focused on that's been your approach, that when the opportunities arise, you know, not too many in a game, that you don't see them, or you're blind to them, or that, to be honest, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know, in that particular example, in the first or second minute, I think it is, like, there's no score, we're not under pressure, like, no one has scored. So I'm not sure why we're not trying to exploit that there and then. Like, brilliant opportunity. Ringrose has, the two midfielders are really tight. And as I said, that left winger is in that horrible exposed position that you do not want to be as a winger. There's space for Ringrose, there's space for Earls, and we don't take it. So I'm not sure to answer that question, really. Like, is it that the tactics are so one way that you should think professional players that have been playing for quite a long time and that are, you know, in the system a long time can see opportunities. But I don't know, was there anyone talking to Burns outside him? Or I'm not sure, to be honest. And it's disappointing that when we got these opportunities, especially, you know, on that transition ball, that we didn't take them. I think, you know, at times as well, we had, our attack was quite lateral. Like, we were kind of going side to side, not making too many meters. But there was times when we did make space on the edge and we chose to kick it away. And I think, as Johnny said, we were trying to, you know, expose the back three, but they did very well under the high ball. So, like, for professional players and the management, I'm not sure why, what's going on, that we're not exploiting the opportunities in the rise. You don't get too many of them in international rugby.
As Alison said there, Johnny, like, it, you know, the tactic was pretty obvious that you were trying to expose the French back three under some high balls early on in the game, at the very least. But at what point in the game does it become obvious that, okay, the kicking was actually quite good, like, they were targeting good areas, the chase was reasonable as well, but, like, the back three, and Bryce Doolan in particular, was actually just dealing with those kicks so well. He was coming up and taking those so brilliantly. At what point do either the players or management have to have something else that they can say, all right, we've tried this tactic a good few times now, it's actually becoming pretty evident that the opposition are comfortable dealing with it, and they seem more than happy for us to do this all day. At what point do you actually change that up to just kind of keep them thinking a little bit more?
Well, it actually is a fine balance, because, you know, as you saw from Ronan Keller's try, they, you know, a bouncing ball creates, you know, the try scoring opportunity, and sometimes you need a bit of luck in that, but you have to force that luck your way. And I'd be kind of, you know, you have to stick, you have to believe in what you're trying to do, you have to stick to it. And it can take, you know, 82, 83 minutes for it to work. And You know, they just need someone to get up once, you know, get a hand in there, take. So you have to, you can't necessarily just kind of throw everything out, because for 40, 50, 60 minutes, it hasn't worked. You have to kind of stick to your process a small bit and keep trying to, if that's where you see their weakness, you know, you have to kind of repeatedly go after it. And that's what they did. But I suppose it's the last probably 2-3 minutes where they got an opportunity inside the half and they're forced back into their own half. And that's just the nature of the beast when you're playing the line speed. For me, I probably would have liked, and they did it against Wales. They tested the blind side quite a lot. They got a lot of change. Ringrose's break in the last minute comes from Scoot down the blind side. That can soften line speed as well. So, yeah, it's a really difficult one, because it's at international level, it's so tight. And it is the taking of one opportunity, or, you know, you might only get two. You have to take one, or, you know, so it's just that level of execution. And they are very close. Like, I know a lot of people are quite negative about where they're, you know, how they've played and what they've done, but they're very, very close. And sometimes you just need a bounce of a ball, or the right person, they get their hands free, you know, or a correct decision in a defensive or a poach to get that transition. But then when you get the transition, like Alisson's already spoken about, to put the ball through the hands and make them pay for their inaccuracies. So it's very hard to put your finger on it. But, and also in a game which is tight, it's very hard to change, you know, to go to plan A, plan B, plan C. It's change. You probably have to look at your set piece attack, try to pull out some of your power plays, and they probably didn't look at that, or they didn't get the opportunity to, you know, to really go get to phase 3, 4, or 5 in their power plays.
Like you mentioned, the, you know, putting those up, and you are kind of looking for the favourable bounce and stuff like that, and, you know, forcing France essentially to make a mistake, knock a ball on and pounce on the scraps. But is that not leaving a huge amount up to chance, that you're doing all this, you're retaining the possession for so long, and like that's physically demanding in and of itself, but the kind of the opportunities you're waiting for are based on the fact that you're hoping the other team are going to spill a ball?
No, I don't. It's not that. It's your intent and getting up and winning. Now, Doolan was exceptional in the air the other day, but, you know, the back three, you know, pound for pound, you'd hope that they can get up and they can disrupt that ball.
Alisson, one thing I am going to just chat to you here about is the Six Nations website. They do a really, really good detailed statistical breakdown of each game. And I was looking through it yesterday for the Ireland-France match. And if you didn't know the scoreline before reading this, like, the stats absolutely lie for the match. You would be fully of the belief that Ireland won the game. And I think it probably just shows up the lack of creativity there. Because looking through, you see Ireland had more carries, more possession. They had a considerably better ruck speed than France had. They had a very low penalty count. They had 100% at the scrum and lineout, so that's a perfect platform to attack from. Throw in a few line-out steals on top of it as well, so you have the counter-attacking options, and the 97% breakdown success. But all of that, if you're looking at that, like, is that a game where Ireland should only be scoring one try in, what, 13 points? Does that actually show up the how poor the creativity was in attack?
We are a team that likes to, you know, keep possession of the ball. We have a high ruck game. I think we seem to be comfortable in that middle pace game. I think when we look a little bit more laboured is when, if we have to attack a little bit faster or the tempo increases, you know, if we make a line break, I think we don't look as comfortable as that. I don't know if the modern day stats necessarily reflect success as they did before, when you look at that, because you look at the likes of even New Zealand and how they play, they might necessarily have a lot of possession, but as they'll kill you on turnovers, on transition ball, and they'll be able to score. So we are lacking creativity. Obviously, France have that Sean Edwards suffocating defence, and we don't seem to have the players, you know, the really physical players that can break that down. So we need to find a way to attack that looks at trying to come to terms with that defence. It's really hard to try and attack against that. We obviously went for a kicking game. I think we kicked something like 41 times in the game. You know, and obviously France kept us in the game longer than we probably should. And if you had really reflected on that game, would you have thought it was a 2-point deficit? And it's not all in doom and gloom, like to lose to France by 2 points and, you know, to not maybe exploit those opportunities we had. It's not all negative. You mean, but they, I suppose they did keep us in the game and they played some lovely attacking rugby. So I suppose we are comfortable in that possession game, holding on to the ball, you know, our rucking game and that middle pace game. But I think to kick on, I suppose we're not seeing a huge evolution in our attack since Mike Catt came in. I'm not really sure where we're going with it yet. That's something that we need to figure out for this set of players and for Irish players in general, what style will suit us best. And Johnny made some good points about, you know, not changing. You know, we had obviously this tactical approach, but yeah, those stats are interesting when you really look at it. But I do think it's not all doom and gloom either, because I think we can improve. We can exploit those opportunities. And I know France kind of probably had opportunities to score and didn't take them. But, you know, it's interesting when you look at it in that sense. But it's a difficult one to really answer, I suppose. But as I said, our attack is very lateral at the moment. We seem to be going side to side and not making too many metres. And we're not pulling out those power plays we would have had under Joe Smith. That was all, you know, he always had good power plays, but our set piece attack wasn't very innovative. But it's something that we need to still work on.
Going through the stats from the game, it just kind of showed that Ireland, they'd actually set up a perfect platform for themselves in the game, but just weren't taking advantage. Like, they'd more carries, more possession. They had the better ruck speed than France. Like, they had a good ruck speed, not to mind a better one than France. Their penalty count was very low. They had 97% breakdown success, which is a good number to have. They had 100% record at the scrums and lineouts, so the platform is there to attack. And they were chipping in with, you know, some lineout steals on top of it as well. But then you look at, they've 3 line breaks over the course of 80 minutes, 3 offloads. That, you know, the platform was there to actually go and do something. It wasn't a case where Ireland just had to sit there and wait for the opportunity.
Yeah, there's a couple of things on this. The France are very comfortable defending. They're set up that way. So defending for long periods of time, they like that. The thing with playing against a side with that line speed and how high they get up the field, you can freeze frame a picture and see, you know, potentially space out wide. And people then get hung up and go, well, why aren't we attacking there? But the way the system works defensively is trying to get the ball there is more or less impossible, because you throw in an extra pass, the defensive line gets further up the field, and then you're into the case of trying to go over the top, which is, you know, high risk but high reward if it comes off, but it is a high risk tactic. Or you kick to the space, or you try and attack repeatedly blindside or closer to the ruck to slow up their line speed. So it's there is an element of people saying, oh, well, we need to expand our game and attack wider. But against a Sean Edwards style defense, it's fool's gold. You know, you try and attack to the edge all the time repeatedly, and a team like France will eat you up, and you'll end up back in your own 22, but you'll have held the ball for, you know, 3-4 minutes. So it is a bit of kind of ebb and flow in that. For me, I think set piece attack and you know, the power plays is something that on Sunday I think they could have probably tried to be a bit more I wouldn't say innovative, but try to have a bit more of a crack. And maybe they did, but the attack kind of fell down at pivotal times, or France got in over the ball. And I think that's probably where they really need to, I think they probably need to step forward a bit. That for me is the big work on is set piece attack. We have seen elements of it during the autumn series, and we have seen power plays that work, and you can see them live as they go forward. But I think that needs to be something that they progress more. And for me, the transition game in that, like that turnover that we've already spoken about, that they have that killer instinct on the transition game. As Alison already said, New Zealand are world leaders at that. France, really good as well. And you saw from their try, their offloading ability is incredible. So it's, for me, I think it's set piece attack and their power plays and their transition, that their killer instinct in transition that can really step this team forward.
So are we guilty a little bit then of kind of analysis by hindsight when you're saying that we're taking these screen grabs and saying, look at all the space out here, and you're kind of highlighting the French line speed? So if, for example, if Billy Burns had, tried to negate that line speed by flicking a few crossfield kicks over towards Keith Earls or James Lowe, and they're picked off and France score three intercept tries, that we're kind of saying, well, this is irresponsible rugby. Why are we trying out these things against such great line speed and such great counter-attacking French rugby?
Yeah, well, look, ambition is fantastic, but at international level, the reality is it's results-based and results-driven. So you have to, it's a risk-reward. And, going into, trying to play to width and, repeatedly going to cross fields or trying to go over the top, that's where you can get in a lot of trouble. And an intercept try or a breakaway in a situation like that, it just absolutely kills momentum that you've built up over a period of time.
Alison, as Johnny said there, it's a results business and it's a results game, and that's what you're ultimately judged on. And it probably brings us nicely to the Italy game next week, because Andy Farrell pretty much echoed those thoughts when he spoke after the match, saying, the ultimate goal is to win these last three games. They have to beat Italy. And he kind of indicated, without saying it specifically, that Murray and Sexton are going to be starting against Italy because it looks like they're going to be fit. A lot of people would argue, like, what is the point of starting Murray and Sexton in those games? What are we going to learn that we don't already know about those two players? Would it, in theory, be time to maybe start one of them against Italy next week? Start one of Murray and Sexton and start alongside them an inexperienced scrum half or an inexperienced out half, and give them a start, give them 60 to 65 minutes rather than bringing them on with 15, 20 minutes to go when a match might already be sewn up.
24 men in camp and he released the other 12, so I suggest there's not going to be wholesale changes. But this brings us back to the same conversation we have, I think, every time we talk about trying to build depth. And obviously it's COVID times, unions are under financial pressure, how far we finish up the table makes a difference, and obviously Farrell wants to win, players want to win. I would like, we look at Johnny Sexton and he's the best 10, but I think in 2 years' time when he's 37 and he's the best 10 in the World Cup, play him. Yes, do play him. I'm not an ageist or anything like that. I think, if you're the best, you're the best. But we need, I nearly get sick of hearing the same thing when we, back after 2019, the same arguments that, players haven't got time and, there's no point sending them out against Georgia and those teams. No disrespect to them in autumn internationals where they won't learn a whole lot. What I would probably be thinking is, start maybe, one or the other. I think more so probably start, Murray and maybe put in whatever 10, just to try and maybe look to the future a bit, if that's what we want to do. If it's not what we want to do and we just want to, win what's in front of us here and then, but we can't be having the argument in 2 years' time at a World Cup then if players haven't been given time. He's still the best, Johnny Sexton, but maybe he doesn't need to play every single game in a Six Nations up to 2 years' time. Like, I don't know. Obviously, you would hope, you listen to pundits every year talking about Italy, how they shouldn't be in the Six Nations, this, that and the other. And now we're kind of having the argument that we can't beat Italy if we make changes. Like, we don't have to make wholesale changes. I think you had your experience nine and then maybe put in a 10 and have Johnny coming off the bench or what it is. I think you make a good point about maybe one or the other, changing one of the halfbacks. But it's an argument that we talk about over and over and again, and it's to what way you want to approach it. You can look at it and say, we want to put back in, he obviously missed the last game, put him back in, the two guys get their confidence up and try and win the game, get the other players' confidence up, or are we looking a little bit to the future? Are we looking to, get that prize money to keep our union afloat? I don't know, what is the approach that they're going to take, but I would probably look at, as you said, one of the two.
And Johnny, what changes would you be thinking of for the Italy game?
Go full throttle. Don't change the pick. Your
absolute,
best team.
Absolute best 15, yeah?
Yeah, absolute best 15. The side needs confidence. They need to grow. They need to play, and try and, confidence is knocked at the moment because they've had two opportunities late in two games to win and they haven't got them. They need to, they need to build that up. Italy are a good side. They have some really good players. You saw by the first couple of minutes in Twickenham, the try they scored, their handling is improving. Simple execution is now not a, you're not necessarily questioning that anymore. You could find yourself in a dogfight, and what does that do for the squad and how things progress into the last two games? So for me, I think you treat it like any other Six Nations game, and you get your head down and you look to really put Italy to the sword. And for me, I think it's definitely a best 15 case.
And when you say best 15, then what players are we talking of bringing in and taking out? I presume that means Murray, Sexton, James Ryan all come back in. Who goes out? Like, okay, obviously we know scrum half and out half go out. Who goes out for James Ryan in the second row? And any other changes from that France game to make it what you would consider the best 15?
I think for me, you're looking at probably six and what Henderson's involvement is. I think he's been very good when he came off the bench and last weekend. It's then your question of what you do with your back row for me. And then defensively, I have a worry about James Lowe. So do you look at bringing Larmour on and putting him on the wing? I think that they would probably be the two areas of selection issue for the management. But for me, I'd probably look to try and get Larmour on the pitch. And it's then a really, really tight call to whether you move Henderson to six or keep Reece Ruddock, who I think did a lot of donkey work that people didn't necessarily see and that he doesn't get credit for a lot. So I would say they're the two selection decisions for me that'll be interesting to see which way they go.
On James Lowe, it's probably a question for both of you. As you said, Johnny, there have been defensive mistakes definitely over the course of the last couple of games. But I've kind of thought that we've been having debates about players like James Lowe for so long that people have been saying, we need to be taking a chance and getting more adventurous players in there, getting more exciting players in there who are willing to take risks. But it kind of seems like when we have someone like that in James Lowe, when you do have the risk that they're going to make a few defensive mistakes, that we're very quickly to play it safe again all of a sudden.
Yeah, but I think the defensive errors are critical defensive errors. And it's great that he can score a try from nothing, but on a simple 3v3, if he bites in and hits second last man and the last man scores, which he did in Wales twice, which way do you go? You have to, if you listen to Rod throughout the week, where he learned and where he progressed was in the Super 14. That's a completely different game, different style, defensive sets, everything. So you know, defense is really, really important up here. So I think he has to get that right before, you know, for me, that's like, he's an excellent player, don't get me wrong, but I just think his consistency around his defensive reads is lacking.
Where do you sit on that side, Alison? Do you take the chance on the guy who has the X factor and can potentially earn you a couple of extra tries, or is the defensive side of things just too big of a concern?
Yeah, he's been showing his defensive frailties for a while now, and I kind of would have thought, I know this is another step up, and I suppose, but as Johnny pointed out, he was at fault, you know, against Wales biting in and, you know, misreading. Obviously, at the weekend, he just went too high and missed. I know he had a big acre of space to defend, but at that level, he needs to make that tackle. He is an X-factor player, but he's not. I would love to see him, but he's not scoring two or three tries per game where you could say, okay, his defence is letting him down, but he's showing us this, this, and this in attack. And he is an X-factor player, but he's playing a different style with Ireland. He's playing with Leinster. Obviously, it's a different competition, different standard, different personnel. We're looking for different things. But I would be hoping, I would have been hoping kind of at this stage, you would have seen it at Leinster. And oftentimes maybe Leinster can be so dominant in games that maybe he's not defensively tested as much as he would be at this level. But biting in at this level, I suppose you can't have that, because as Johnny pointed out there, you know, it can lead to mistakes that lead to a try. So, Larmour would be someone that I'd be looking at, obviously, potentially to come in as well. I think it's an interesting one, James Lowe, because he is, you, if you were to look at him and you wouldn't, he's playing a different style, obviously, with Ireland, but at one point in the game, towards the end of the game, which I thought was interesting, he received a kick and he bet his first defender, and he only had Fico in front of him, and I think he had five or six attackers. And I suppose the James Lowe that we would see at club level would probably, you know, look to take on that man and get the offload, but he looked to kick. So he's not maybe, he was unlucky to score, I think, in that attacking play that we had, where, you know, Henshaw to Burns, to Keenan. I think Keenan slightly gave the ball too early, didn't square up. It was to Fix, he kind of gave it a bit early and loaded well, but I think he's probably not scoring enough tries to excuse the defensive errors we're seeing again and again, which is unfortunate, because, you know, he is a very exciting player. He's got the X factor.
Mm-hmm. We're running out of time. I'm going to move on to Wales. There's a text in here from Malps. Wales versus England, the big one next weekend. It certainly is. And who would have thought it, guys? Wales, two wins out of two, and the win against Scotland in particular. Looking back on the stats, as we mentioned, the stats lying in the Ireland game, like the stats in this Scotland-Wales game lie even more. A bonus point victory with 90 seconds of possession in the opposition 22. That's some goal.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, and they're just so dogged. Like, they stick in a game, they do ride their luck, but then they have that killer instinct on, you know, and it's you know, you look at Rhys Samet, you know, his second try is just like out of nothing and so well finished. And again, they have a tap tackle, last phase to get it out. Very similar to Justin Tupuric's tackle on Ringrose the week before. They just fight for everything, and their doggedness has really, you know, is paying dividends. But, you know, look, in this, belief is like a virus. It just spreads within a squad, and it's very hard when you have confidence and belief. Teams are really hard to beat, and Wales are showing that.
And traditionally, Alison, as well, Wales have been a team when they've built up a little bit of speed. Like, we would have seen it so many times in the Warren Gatland years, and even back as far as 2005 when they were completely written off and won the Grand Slam with Mike Ruddock. Like, they've been written off so many times before, but once they pick up a couple of wins, they're an absolute juggernaut of a team. And you look at some of the players that they have to come back into the lineup for England, potentially George North, Josh Adams, Johnny Williams, Jonathan Davies, and Josh Navidi all missed the game at the weekend just gone. That's an incredible cavalry of players to be able to bring back into a team.
Yeah, I think they've got the momentum on the side. They've had a bit of luck, you know, obviously playing against 14 men in two games. Who could have saw that happening? But, you know, luck is with them, momentum is with them, confidence. I would never write Wales off, especially when they're in this position in the Six Nations. They are a team that can, you know, are able to pull it out. And they've got that X factor there, as we saw in Lewis Rees-Samet, the ability to do that. His confidence is high, their confidence is high. Like, for a second, you know, I wouldn't, especially this COVID times, you don't know, you know, who could come in and out. And obviously, you know, Lewis Rees-Samet only got the opportunity because of Adams. So, like, you know, you see players like him emerging. So I definitely would not write them out. I know there's been a lot of criticism of their coach within Wales, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're two from two. So at the end of the day, it's results driven, as Johnny earlier said. They won their two games. It doesn't really matter how or what the reason. They've two from two, and they're going to have that confidence and that momentum, and they're going to feel like they'll get better and better. So I definitely would not write them off.
Johnny, how much of a chance do you give them against England, particularly considering as well, like, England, I know Wales have had to dog out two victories and haven't been overly impressive, really, but England haven't been particularly impressive either. And it was something we kind of hinted at earlier on, when you were talking about Italy, that the scoreline in the England-Italy game, it probably wasn't reflective overall on the entire game. Like, England, they weren't hugely impressive. And given the history between the sides, you wouldn't think that Welsh team would fear England in any way.
No, not at all. I think it's going to be a cracker. And I'd, you know, if they get some of those injuries back, as you say, that's a very good cavalry to arrive. You know, I think they have a really good opportunity. England seem to be kind of stuttering, staggering at the moment, and they don't seem to have the cohesion. Is that because of kind of the lack of game time that certain players have had, particularly the Sarries boys, and then, you know, the English team's not playing for a while, and kind of it has been a lot of teams have been stop start because of COVID. So you know, maybe they're going to get better as the competition goes on, because they have spend more time with each other in camp. They're getting used to each other again, so England could be an improver. But you know, I think they're probably going into this game, I'd say England would be, you know, I wouldn't be worried, but I'd fancy Wales to really put it up to them.
Just one more on Wales as well. This was something I noticed watching the Wales-Scotland match back as well. And look, it's not completely, you know, like for like with the Irish situation, but I just thought it was interesting the way Wayne Pivac was willing to take a chance in that game. So 49 minutes in the Wales-Scotland game, Wales were 17-8 behind. So you've Wayne Pivac, who's already under immense pressure for his job. Like, there was talking, you know, people calling for his head after the Autumn Nations Cup and the disastrous 2020 campaign. But he has Gareth Davies and Dan Biggar at scrum half and out half, 59 and 89 caps each. And he hauls them off after 49 minutes because the game plan just isn't working out. And he brings on Kieran Hardy at scrum half, who's two caps, and Callum Sheedy, who has five. It's an incredibly ballsy call to make. And, you know, obviously the red card had an enormous impact a while later, but that's an enormous chance to be taking. And look, you just like to see someone being that little bit ballsy and roll the dice a bit.
Yeah, I'd admire someone to do that and for it to work out. I mean, it obviously worked out for him and they won the game. So, like, he's the coach. He can essentially do what he wants. I know he's under pressure, but he obviously was confident in a decision to do that, and it paid off for him. So commend him for that.
Johnny?
I've seen Craig Casey get an opportunity on Saturday, you know, come off the bench. I know the game was in the melting pot, but it would have been great to see what he could have brought to the game. Even in the last 5-6 minutes when Ireland had that ball, he's one of those people that can get a half break, get his arms free, very busy around the ruck. And you know, that's probably, you know, there's, I'm sure there's a amount of frustration on his behalf that he didn't get on being on the bench for, you know, his potential first cap. But you know, that's something that I would have liked to see, would Casey coming off the bench, you know, even 5 minutes from the end, just throw him out there, see how he goes, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, you know, worst case scenario, Ireland still lose that game. You know, the opportunity is there for him to make an impact.
Yeah, completely. And like, he comes off the bench, he makes a mistake. You know, he's going to learn from it. You know, failing at the highest level for a young player is probably, it would be one of his biggest and greatest learnings in his career. So, you know, it was very much a shot to nothing for me. And I think that's one of the things that I would have been bitterly disappointed about, not to see him come off the bench for the last 10 minutes.
Now, before we finish up, we did our kind of Lions standouts from last week. The two of you were, pretty much singing off the same hymn sheet. I don't know, did you confer beforehand even, but what couple of players would you have picked out over the course of round two that kind of stuck their head up, guys that wouldn't really have been on the radar enormously in advance?
Obviously, Lewis Rees-Sammet. I don't even have to say why, but he definitely, as I said, he got his opportunity. I've been watching him in the English Premiership. He's been scoring tries in that, so he came on and showed his X factor at the weekend. Another one I've picked, and obviously he's not out of the blue, but I don't know if he was in contention for Lions before this, but Anthony Watson, I think, had a good game for England, kind of showed his X factor as well in terms of playing, you know, putting his hands up for that selection in terms of, you know, getting back into form. So they're the two that I picked, happen to be two wingers. So I just picked two.
Yeah, I completely agree. Rees-Sammet, I think definitely he has the potential to be a bolter if he keeps going with his, you know, his finishing ability. And then for me, again, I thought Justin Tuprik really kind of put another good performance down really built on where he was the first weekend. And I think he's someone that, coming back into form, he could be a genuine, you know, potential starter at one of the tests. And then obviously, I know he's probably on the plane already, but someone like Stuart Hogg and his performance, you'd be very, you'd be excited to be supporting him in the summer if he continues that vein of form that he's in.
Just very quickly on Rees-Sammet, actually, with Josh Adams set to come back in or available for selection again after his suspension against England, like Rees-Sammet, it seemed anyway, was the one who came in to take Josh Adams' place over the course of the last couple of games. Does Josh Adams come in? And if he does he replace Louis Rees-Sammet, or does he come over onto the other wing? Liam Williams maybe switching over to fullback. Lee Halfpenny, does he drop out? What way do they go with there?
I wouldn't take him out anyway. I think definitely as a winger, his confidence is up now. I'm sure he's dying to go and play the next game and get his hands on the ball again. And so I think he's taken his opportunity as well. I don't think, I would not take him out anyway. But I suppose that's the coach's prerogative. But definitely I wouldn't be doing it. His confidence is high. When a winger's confidence is high and they're beating people and they're scoring tries, I wouldn't take him out.
No. I think he starts, and I suppose the back three selection, as you say, do you move Williams to 15? Halfpenny hasn't been great, in my opinion, over the last couple of weeks. But then you have to figure out your, your place kicking. You know, Dan Biggar, you know, I thought he was actually pretty poor at the weekend. I'm a big Dan Biggar fan. So if you start Sheedy then, but Sheedy's not necessarily, you know, a place kicker as you saw last weekend. So you have to manage that dynamic for Wales, you know, thrown in on top of form. But for me, Rees-Sammet definitely starts, I don't think. But there is an added dimension to the selection issues there when it comes into place kicking. And you're probably 10 and 15 not being in the form that you would like them to be in. But they're your first and second choice kickers.
And finally, before we finish up, were there any players who probably would have been there or thereabouts in the conversation for Lions that might actually be playing themselves out of form a little bit?
I think Lee Halfpenny for me is someone that probably just hasn't fired as of yet. And yeah, he'd be one that you probably would have had on your, you know, on experience, and he's been there before. He'd be one for me that probably isn't performing the way he needs to be on the plane.
And I couldn't really think of anyone. I was trying to think of anyone really below par, but I would agree with Johnny there on that, you know, he's not playing where he needs to be to get on that plane.
All right, Alison, Johnny, you were coming in
there.
Yeah,
no, just, I think it'll be an interesting one with a certain amount of the Saracens boys. You know, Billy Vunipola probably doesn't look as fit as he should be if he was still in the Premiership. So there's a couple of interesting calls to come down the line, particularly with those Saracens guys.
Yeah, certainly is. They haven't really fired too much so far, but still a few games to go and plenty of opportunities to put themselves back in the picture. Johnny, Alison, thanks a million for joining us again this week.
No problem. Thank you.
Cheers. No problem. Thanks.
So that was Johnny Murphy and Alison Miller with us on the Six Nations show. Before we finish up, a couple more bits. We're going to run through a few of the texts that have been coming in. Common. Stephen O'Connor points out France were offside a lot in the last 10 minutes. They definitely were. But I think the overall problem in rugby is that teams are just consistently offside a lot in the last 10 minutes, and it is just not being enforced right across the board. The last few minutes of a game of rugby, particularly a close one, are just a series of offsides that aren't being punished, really. Henry, 83. Physically, we weren't able to match the likes of France and England, but there's no reason why we can't create space. And I suppose that's coming down to the risk-reward that Johnny was pointing out, that do you take the chance and, you know, be a bit more gunslinger and try to pop through a few more kicks to negate that space, but then you're running a big risk. But 41% gain line success, I think, tells a big story from that match, that one-out runners against a team that are pretty much overpowering you are not going to work. Eli Cowan says, are we getting the most out of Gary Ringrose? I feel he was wasted in the Irish team and is having to do so much more to try and create his own space rather than getting a slight chance to make serious yards because he picks such great lines. I think that was something that that Niamh Briggs pointed out on Wednesday Night Rugby last night, that, you know, when the Irish players and Ringrose are getting the ball so often, you know, hips are facing the touchline and they're just not carving out the opportunities. Sea Power, what about Ringrose, Burns and Gibson Park not giving out the ball when we had men over? It happened heaps of times because they chose contact. And I suppose that probably comes down to, is the regame plan just so ingrained in Ireland that they're not willing to take those chances, and do you have to take the shackles off? And David Farrell, our work rate off the ball is not where it needs to be, both in attack and defence. We're lateral and too flat in attack. I think too flat in attack is exactly what people have been saying over the last couple of days. Right, the Six Nations table then, as it is after round two. We can get it up on the screen here in front of us. France and Wales lead the way. France, incredibly Wales, I should say, actually, with that bonus point win against Scotland, having had just 90 seconds of possession in the opposition 22. Pretty staggering. And as we pointed out, they are an absolute juggernaut when they get a bit of momentum. And they've got players coming back for the game against England coming up. France, though, look dead set favourites to win this Six Nations and potentially take a Grand Slam. But I suppose they've been hit with a little bit of a stumbling block this week with Fabien Galthié and William Servat and another member of their backroom team having to isolate now because of COVID-19 positives. But hopefully the squad in general can get through that. They haven't had any positive cases. Neither have Ireland, having played them. And we might just get that table back up on the screen there again. As you can see, Ireland down in fifth place, just two losing bonus points from two so far. And pretty much need three wins out of three to salvage this campaign. The fixtures then, nothing this weekend, but we do have three games on the following week. So on the 27th, Ireland, a Saturday game after two Sunday matches so far. They're taking on Italy at 2:15. And then it's Wales hosting England in Cardiff at 4:45. That's going to be an absolute belter. And then France against Scotland. It was Scotland who ended France's Grand Slam hopes last season when they beat them at Murrayfield. Can they do the same again in Paris this time round? We'll have to wait and see. But no Six Nations this weekend. As I mentioned, though, there are some Pro 14 games to look forward to. Ulster and Leinster in action tomorrow. Ulster taking on the Glasgow Warriors away from home, while Leinster are also away to the Dragons. That game kicks off at 7:35. And then two 7:35 kickoffs on Saturday. Connacht hosting the Cardiff Blues. That's second against third in Conference B. A win for Connacht gives them, like, they'll pretty much be guaranteed, I think, at that stage, to be playing Champions Cup rugby next season. It would be a real 8-pointer, potentially a 10-pointer going on bonus points. And then Munster away to Edinburgh as well, also 7:35 on Saturday. That's it though for this Thursday's episode of the Six Nations show here on OTB Sports. If you missed any of this, you can play back on our video streams, or we'll have it podcasted later on the OTB Sports app. And a reminder, all of our rugby coverage here on OTB is brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. Keep an eye out as well for more rugby on OTB this week. Alan Quinlan, as usual, will be back on OTB AM tomorrow morning, and we'll be building up to the game against Italy across all of our channels next week. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.
The Six Nations Show on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.